The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Shavuot Tov, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov, Shavuot Tov. I like the idea of the drive-in movies, by the way.
Yeah, there was, I think it is time to bring them back.
There was an event that took place here locally for children and families of people who have very significant illnesses, to try and entertain them. All drove to a location, drive-in style, enjoyed the entertainment and then went home. That's where the world's moving, right?
Absolutely. Crazy situation. It's crazy that this is where we're at. What is the situation with COVID in Israel? Because certainly the numbers are increasing.
Lots and lots of pressure, lots of conflicting advice, lots of conflicting stories coming out. The numbers are the only thing that we can be absolutely sure about, and the numbers are going up significantly. Still, going on around 1,000 new cases of the virus being diagnosed every day. Hotels now being reopened to accommodate people who have been diagnosed with a virus. One particular situation at a yeshiva in Bnei Brak where 140 students were tested positive for the coronavirus in one institution.
Wow.
So they've all now been moved out to a coronavirus hotel. Most of these people, fortunately, will not be seriously ill. They will be just lightly infected. They will show just light signs, and they will probably, in the most part, recover okay from it afterwards. But of course, while they are suffering from the virus, they can infect other people, and this is extremely dangerous. And so obviously they need to be moved out and put into quarantine in order to ensure that they don't pass it on. The stories coming out about, are the Shin Bet methods of tracing the virus using our phones being effective? The Knesset passed a law that allows now the Shin Bet to track our phones and to track people who might have come close to people with infected by the virus. Theoretically, if you are one of those people, you get a message to your phone to say you have been in close proximity to somebody who is infected with the virus and you should turn up for a test. That's in theory how it works. But of course, lots and lots of issues, privacy issues and other issues that are going on. School parties, end of year school parties causing a lot of infections. People seem to be very eager just to get on with their general lives, their normal lives, and not take the necessary precautions. It seems quite inevitable that the government will once again have to implement new restrictions, further restrictions, after restrictions already have been tightened up. Now we're only allowed to have 50 people meeting in a closed area. Last time I spoke to you, it was 100. It's already been reduced down to 50, and the expectation is that it might be reduced further to either to 20 or perhaps even not at all. And there are certain people who are predicting that it is inevitable that we will need to go back into a full lockdown situation in order to try to control what's currently happening here at the moment. Very, very strange indeed. And the sad thing is that we don't see this happening in other countries where they've had opening up. You know, we see a number of European countries where they've managed to open their economies, that they seem somehow to have managed to maintain control over the virus spread. Here, for some reason, that's not been the case, and I'm not sure if that's because we're just an outlier and we're doing something that is wrong. Clearly, we're doing a lot of things that are wrong, otherwise the virus wouldn't be spreading in the way that it is, or whether it is inevitable that other countries are going to experience the same thing in the fullness of time. I'm really not sure what to say, but I guess only time will tell, and we'll look back on it and we'll draw our own conclusions.
Yeah, and because we've never been through this before, no country's been through this before, everybody really is just trying to do their best with the information that they have, and that is the difficult thing about it. And let's just talk about Iran for a minute, because they're all over the news. Iran's now admitted that significant damage was caused by a fire to its Natanz nuclear healthcare facility late last week. We spoke about it, but we referred to it, but there wasn't much information. Now they have acknowledged it. Do we know what caused the fire?
So we don't know what caused the fire, and the fire was only one of four mysterious explosions that took place at various different facilities across Iran last week. So after the Natanz explosion that took place on Thursday, there was also another fire that damaged a power plant on Saturday, and this comes after two other events took place earlier in the week. Explosions, cyber attacks, who knows what they are. I mean, the reports that I've been reading about these events are very, very conflicting. On the one hand, there was a lot of talk about the fact that the explosion at Natanz, which seems to be the most significant of the attacks that took place last week. And I think there is no doubt that these were attacks. I don't think that these were just simply events that took place due to, I don't know, explosions. You know, one report said it was just a gas explosion that took place on site. But it seems as if though it's fairly clear now that these were attacks, and there is even an organization that's claimed responsibility for at least some of the attacks. But it seems to me that on the one hand, some people are talking about an explosive device that must have been planted at Natanz, so it actually exploded, and other reports are saying that it was as a result of some cyber attack that took place that caused this fire. What's clear is that quite a significant piece of a building has been burnt down at Natanz, a building that's above ground, bearing in mind, of course, that a lot of the facility at Natanz is actually below ground. And what's significant about Natanz is that this is where advanced centrifuges are being assembled. And we know that these centrifuges ultimately could lead to Iran producing a nuclear weapon, and that they need to go through this advanced centrifuge process in order to produce the necessary enriched uranium that will allow them to produce a nuclear weapon. And it is very, very strange, one might even say coincidental, that exactly the facility that's being used to produce these advanced centrifuges is the one that mysteriously gets damaged by fire.
Yeah, yeah. So frustrating for them.
And of course, yeah, exactly. I mean, who would think that that would happen to them so coincidentally? Mm. But of course, a lot of fingers being pointed towards Israel. It doesn't seem, it seems more than coincidental that these four events all took place over just a few days last week, each of which was, seems to be, have been very pinpointed as to what it was aimed towards. It wasn't just coincidental. It wasn't just something that happened by coincidence. It seems to have been very, very targeted indeed. There was this explosion, for example, at a power plant in Ahvaz, which was followed by reports of a chlorine gas leak at a petrochemical center in the southeast of Iran. These are all very, very pointed events, and they seem to have been focused, almost even orchestrated behind the scenes. And now, you know, I have no information at all to suggest who might have been involved in this, but we do know that this explosion at Natanz, which seems to have been the most significant event that happened last week, seems to have put the Iranian nuclear program back about a year or maybe longer, even by their own admission. And it comes exactly when Prime Minister Netanyahu announced that it would extend the term of the Mossad chief, Yossi Cohen, until June of next year, which is very, very unusual because his term was due to expire already before that. But it has already now been announced that his term will be extended by 6 months. So he wasn't due to leave until the end of this year. But we already know that he will not be leaving when he was due to leave at the end of the year, but it will go on at least until the middle of next year. And the Prime Minister simply said, given the security challenges faced by the State of Israel, he has decided to extend the term of Yossi Cohen by 6 more months. And that's the end of that. So I don't know whether one wants to link the events together somehow. Everybody will draw their own conclusions, but this is definitely a very, very significant event. And of course, the Israeli defense system is expecting retaliations as a result of this. So there has been talk about Iran potentially retaliating against these coincidental events that have taken place there.
Fascinating. And yeah, and it's so murky because no one admits anything. So it's all just speculation and just putting all the information together.
Yeah, the surprising thing for me is that the Iranians have admitted as much as they have. They even had TV cameras going around at times to show the extent of the damage. But I think that the main purpose of that whole show on behalf of the Iranians was to really show that there were a lot of other things around that facility that were undamaged. I think they were trying to try and turn it into something more positive. But there is no doubt that substantial damage was done, and the Iranians have really admitted to it for the first time. It's not usual for them to do that.
Yeah, and certainly that's going to be a story that's, I think, going to be with us for a while. The IDF was in action over Gaza last night after 3 missiles were fired from Gaza yesterday evening. What precipitated this?
The announcement that came from Gaza speaks about retaliation against the whole idea of annexation and just a reaction to the overall situation against the U.S. plan, peace plan, and the deal of the century, the so-called Trump deal of the century. This was all that we could really gather from the announcement that came out of Gaza. And what we do know is that 3 missiles were fired towards Israel. 2 of them triggered code red alert sirens. They happened to fall into open areas. No damage was done. No injuries were caused. A 3rd missile that was also fired was actually intercepted by Iron Dome. So fortunately, there was no damage, no injuries. But of course, the Israeli Air Force did decide to retaliate against this. They sent jets and helicopters that struck an underground facility that belongs to Hamas in the northern part of Gaza. And of course, it comes with the usual announcement from the IDF and from the Israeli government that says that any kind of terror activity that's aimed at Israel is actually the responsibility of Hamas, and that Hamas will be a responsibility and consequences for any of these attacks. But unfortunately, the danger continues, where even one missile could potentially cause death and injury. So, of course, as we head into the school holiday period now and people are at a loss as to what they should be doing during this corona period, we also have to deal with the possibility of missiles falling, especially in the south of Israel. It seems as if the Fatah and Hamas are somehow managing to unite in their opposition against the annexation plans and against the U.S. peace plan for the first time in quite some time. We know that Fatah and Hamas are not natural bedfellows. They have a lot of conflict between themselves. But at the moment, at least, they're trying to put up some sort of a common front, some sort of united front against all of this. And this is where the rocket fire seems to have come from Gaza in order to make a statement about these events.
Yep, crazy one indeed. And finally, Israel launched its latest satellite in the early hours of this morning.
Yeah, I mean, this is really exciting. I mean, this is the Ofek 16 reconnaissance satellite that was launched by the Ministry of Defense. And the thing that I love so much about this is not necessarily what its capability is, of course, which we won't really get to know in any sort of detail. But the nice thing I like about this is that not only is it actually built and constructed in Israel, but it's actually launched from Israel. And so it was launched in the early hours of this morning. Ofek 16 is apparently an electro-optical reconnaissance satellite, which has advanced capabilities. It's Israel's first launch of a satellite since the Amos 17 satellite, which took off from Florida back in 2017. So it's been already more than 3 years since the last Israeli satellite was launched. And of course, this is a very important satellite, as we understand it, for military purposes and for reconnaissance purposes. Israel relies a lot on the information and the intelligence that is gathered from its network of satellites. And this Ofek 16 is certainly going to be one of those important satellites in order to gather any kind of intelligence and reconnaissance information that it will be able to do. Once it becomes operational, which it already has gone into its satellite, into its orbit, it has already reached its orbit, and it now becomes the responsibility of the IDF's 9900 intelligence unit. They will be responsible for monitoring the satellite and, of course, all the information that is going to be gleaned from it. And so just another feather in the cap, I think, of Israeli aeronautical capabilities. Israel Aerospace Industries and the Ministry of Defense, who've invested hundreds of millions of shekels in order to get the satellite up into orbit this morning.
Incredible. And it's so interesting to see this. If you look at this report, you've got COVID, you've got the existential threat of Iran, you've got a localized threat of Hamas.